It now gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for tonight, Kathy.
My name is Kathy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kathy.
And I'm from Santa Maria, but I think you know that. And I want to thank all my Santa Maria friends for coming. Hi.
Glad you're here, too.
And, I'm grateful to be here. Thank you for asking me. You asked me about 5 weeks ago, and for the past 5 weeks, I haven't been able to sleep at night. And, you know, because for 25 years, I drank, right? So there was all that to go through, right? Year after year after year. And I've been sober for 32 years. And so, and I haven't been a perfect person in AA, so there's a lot of that to get through as well. And and I'm an old person. You know, I'm in my 70s, you know? So there's just a lot of history there. And I have plenty of time. What time do I end? 8 o'clock?
Yeah. Okay. Good.
All right. So, but I wanted to read something first. I wanted to read from one of the stories. It is Gratitude in Action. And it starts on page 193 from the big book. And I was reading this, you know, like a sponsor I had told me I should read 2 pages of the big book every day. I'm not perfect about doing that, but over this 5 week period, I did pick it up a few times to read it, and I really liked what this story said. And it says, "A Gratitude in Action, the story of Dave B., one of the founders of AA in Canada in 1944. My sobriety date, let me just get that out there first. It is September 4th, 1992, Labor Day weekend. So this is what I want to read a few things out of the story. I believe it would be good to tell the story of my life. Doing so will give me the opportunity to remember that I must be grateful to God and to those members of Alcoholics Anonymous who knew AA before me." Can everybody hear me? Okay. "Telling my story reminds me that I could go back to where I was if I forget the wonderful things that have been given to me or forget that God is the guide who keeps me on this path." And I think that, you know, telling your story is just one of the best ways to be of service in AA. And, you know, it's a hard thing to do, too. You know, I've lost a lot of sleep over the past 5 weeks. And I've written a lot in my journal, too. I have journaled. I mean, I journal anyway, but I've journaled like crazy, just processing, even going back, you know, just reviewing it, because it has been a long time. And I just love, I mean, I cried, I laughed, I called my sister crying, I have a twin sister, and, you know, and just, you know, prayed and asked for people to pray for me, and a couple of people did pray for me, you know, and somebody prayed for me when I got here tonight, and I just want to say those prayers were working, you know, they really were working, and I, you know, today, this morning, I was just, you know, I listen to Christian music in the morning, and I write in a journal, and I spend my time with God, you know, at 11th step in the morning, and I was, you know, just really moved to just ask him to help me to be honest, you know, and just really tell the, you know, I want to keep it clean because there's kids in the room, you know, but I want to just be honest about, you know, my alcoholism, and I don't want to, you know, just be prideful about anything, because I have done that in the past, you know, I haven't really been truthful, and I always wanted to look good, right, because I was a woman alcoholic, and there's a lot of shame there, and so you just always need to look good, you know, put your lipstick on, have your, I'm glad I figured out early in the week what I was going to wear tonight, because that would just, I would tear all the clothes out of the drawers in the closet trying to figure that out. So, but yeah, it's really good to review my story, you know, And I'm grateful. You know, I'm grateful that I'm a recovering alcoholic. And so what was it like? Well, I highlighted this one sentence here that this, you know, guy said, I knew firsthand that mysterious state of people who appear to be sure of themselves but are actually eaten alive with fear inside. And that is me. I am just full of fear. And you know what? I was fearful as a little girl. You know, I have this twin sister, right? And when we got the twin beds, we shared a room. We always shared a room. When we got the twin beds, I was in her bed every single night because I was afraid. You know, something was under the bed. I was afraid of the dark. You know, and every night I was in her bed. And our parents got us a double bed. They finally just got us a double bed, because we were getting bigger and, you know, it was hard to fit in that, two of us in that twin bed. But I'm grateful to my twin sister. You know, I'm grateful she was there. Because we had a journey. We had a really adventurous childhood. And maybe some of you had that too, if you were an Air Force or, you know, a military brat. I was a military brat. I was born into the military. You know, my dad had been in not even a year in the military, and I was born at a hospital on an Air Force base in Biloxi, Mississippi. And I was the first one out. I'm 9 minutes older than my sister. And, you know, 6 months later, we went to Washington State. Now, we stayed there for 7 years. But after that, we moved every 2 or 3 years. And sometimes it was more than that. You know, one time it was a 3-month South Carolina, and we went out of the country twice. We went to England twice. In the early 60s, I was a kid in my elementary school. We were in England, and it was really, you know, when I look back over this, I've been thinking a lot about it. It was really amazing, you know, when that time we went to England, because we went there twice, we lived off base, and we lived in this big, it was a mansion that was converted into, in England they call it flats, it's an apartment. There were 10 flats in this big mansion, and there were military family, American families living there, and British families. I had British friends. Now, we got on a little bus and we went to the base to go to school, but I had English friends, you know, and that was just really, really very, very cool. We traveled in Europe, you know, we went on a European vacation for 2 weeks. My dad drove his car onto the ship there, and we went from England to Norway, and we tooled around 7 countries for 2 weeks. And that was so exciting, you know. And then we went back to England. We came back to the U.S. We were in New Mexico, and then we were in Mississippi again, and then we were in North Dakota, and a little bit in South Carolina, and then we went back to England. And I was in 9th grade, and I was 16 years old. No, I was probably 15 going on 16. And we lived off base for a little while there, which was kind of neat. And then we moved on base. And that was where, you know, there's the peer pressure, right? And I think you can all relate to this. Do you smoke? You know, the new kids. I was always the new kid in school, by the way. And the fear, there's a lot of fear from that. So many new schools, always being the new kid. And I had social anxiety. I had a really hard time. And then I would leave these friends behind, right? We had to leave things behind. You know, we had to leave toys behind. We had to leave a dog behind. You know, it was hard, and I didn't like being in the military. I didn't like moving around all that much. It's today when I can look back at the adventure it was that I can appreciate it. But there I am in middle school, and I mean, the new kid, do you smoke? No, you don't smoke? You know, so I had to take up smoking. Do you drink? Well, what do you mean drink? Well, do you drink beer? No. You don't drink beer, you know, and so I had to take up drinking. But I had my first drunk. It was at a party. There were boys and girls at the party, There were some that were older. You know, there were some, actually some high schoolers at this party. And there was a guy in high school that was there. He was really cute at this party. We were, I had my eye on him, and we were playing Spin the Bottle. Mm-hmm. And I was playing, I mean, because I was having a beer, I had the guts to play. But when the bottle landed on that cute high school boy, I got to kiss him. I never would have done that without that beer. And that was where alcohol was powerful to me. It's like, that was the answer to my problem. I always just felt like something's wrong with me. I don't ever feel like I fit in. I'm scared all the time. I feel like I don't know anything. I feel like I'm stupid, you know? I was actually, and you know what, I'm gonna talk about my parents, and I'm gonna say, I really wanna honor my parents, because I got past all that anger at them, and I wanna honor them, but I do have to talk about some of the things that happened. Because of AA, I know that that parents did the best they could, you know? And just like I'm an alcoholic, by the way, I forgot to say, my parents are alcoholic. Their parents are alcoholic. And my parents' parents were alcoholic. My great-grandfather was murdered in a bar. You know, and you know, everybody is just alcoholic in my family. And my siblings, we're all alcoholic, and their kids are alcoholic. And so it really runs in the family, and mental health is another thing, you know, that runs in our family. And there's a lot of anxiety disorder. I have it. I have an anxiety disorder. When I moved to Santa Maria, I had some depression, and I saw a therapist, and I was having a hard time coping at work. And I learned that I knew I had anxiety, but it was called an anxiety disorder. And I was, and I had OCD, and I had depression. You know, I didn't know I had mental illnesses. I knew that my father was bipolar, and that my mother had an anxiety disorder, and that my grandmother was schizophrenic, paranoid schizophrenic, you know. But I didn't know that I had, you know, mental health issues too. I mean, I knew I was an alcoholic when I moved here, and I was in recovery. But getting back to that beer, I was just able to just chill out and even have fun at this party. And it really felt good. And so, we were there for 3 years, and I graduated from high school there in England. And those were the fun years of my drinking. Those were the years that I could actually have a high school experience and not have to just, you know, sit in the back of the room and hide my face and not have friends, because that's what would have happened, right? With, you know, the way I felt about myself. And, you know, and why did I feel that? I mean, I told you I have a lot of fear. We moved around a lot. But, you know, the parents really weren't the greatest parents, you know, although they tried the best they could. You know, we did have, you know, my father was a good worker. He was in the military. He was enlisted in the military, not rich, but, you know, he went to work every day. And we had a roof over our heads. We had health care, and we had food on the table. But we had all those physical things, but what we didn't have was we didn't feel loved. I didn't feel loved. You know, I didn't, there weren't warm and fuzzies in my family. My father was angry a lot, and he had this real angry face, and I hated that angry face. And I would rather just get a spanking than see that angry face. And he, I'm gonna say a bad word right now, and forgive me for it, but he called us shit asses. And that's a terrible name to be called, you know, and I felt like crap about myself, you know. He told me I was stupid, and I really thought that I was stupid. And so I really just didn't even try in school. I wasn't a good student, I didn't try, and I didn't get good grades, and I kind of barely got by. Well, you know, like I said, I started drinking. Now I'm you know, having the social life in high school, and you know, that's not good for the grades in high school either, right? I, you know, wasn't a good student at all. And I just gave up. You know, I didn't think I was smart. You know, I should say though, there was this time when we went to Mississippi for that 1 year, and I was in sixth grade. I did have a teacher, and you know, this is the only teacher in my whole school you know, career, elementary, high school, that I remember her name, Mrs. Klein. And she was a lovely woman, and she was a newlywed, and she really was just real with the kids in the class, you know. And she would tell us how she forgot to take the saran wrap off the casserole and put it in the oven, you know, and we'd all laugh. And she was just a really neat woman. But she saw me outside waiting for my mother one day to come and pick me up from school. And she came over to me, and she just held my face, and she told me I was special. And I never heard that from, you know, from anybody, that I was special, but she told me that. And when I got into the car, I said, "Mom, Mrs. Klein told me I was special." Nothing. She didn't say nothing. She didn't smile. Nothing, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were just no emotions. You know, my parents had no emotions. And they, I'm sure, had worse, you know, when they grew up than I had. I know they did. And I know a little bit about their story. And so, anyway, so I just really felt bad about myself, and drinking made me feel better, right? And drinking, it was just fun, and I'd get together with these friends and these parties, and you know what? God took care of me, you know? I mean, we are so vulnerable. Women, when we're out there drinking, we're young, we're so vulnerable, right? Well, I was living on an Air Force base, right? And these boys that I was hanging around with, and also this was very different times. Okay, this was in the 60s. It wasn't cool to have sex outside of marriage. It wasn't cool to get pregnant, and it was very shaming in that era, right? But the other thing is, kids are really disciplined. You know, when you are brought up by your father, he is trained in his program that the kids have to stay out of trouble, right? And so the boys, you know, and you know, if there was a drunk boy in our drinking group, you know, we'd go into the woods and drink, or we'd go to this beach. The beaches in England have rocks. They're not comfortable to walk on. And the guys would protect us. You know, if there was a drunk guy that was just getting a little too, you know, the boys would protect us. And the other thing is, drugs were not on this base. There were no drugs, because if there were, the kids I was hanging around with would have had them. So there were no drugs. So that's not part of my experience at all. I was just hooked on alcohol. But you know, it was just a real fun time. And I have good memories, and you know, I really wasn't blacking out much then. You know, I do remember having a blackout, though. I remember in the winter leaving a party and going home without my shoes, and I didn't know where my shoes were the next day. And it was cold, you know. And my sister didn't drink then, and she would protect me. She would sneak me in the window so Dad wouldn't see me, because he would get very angry. And she would clean me up when I vomited all over myself, you know. And so she would kind of help me out there. She was like a little codependent there, a little Al-Anon, right? And she is an alcoholic today, though. But anyway, those were the fun times. And I was a party girl. That's what I was. And my drinking, you know, was just certain times, mostly on the weekends. And I worked, I had a job at the NCO club, which was really fun because all my customers were young GIs. And, you know, I had dates, yeah. But they, you know, they didn't, I didn't have anything bad happen to me with these guys, because they would lose a strike because my father outranked them, you know. So anyway, those were good times. But when I came back to the U.S., it was in 1970, and there was a lot of drugs around then. I didn't do the drugs, but I started needing more and more alcohol. I couldn't do anything without a drink. I couldn't go on a job interview without a drink. I couldn't go out on a date without a drink. I couldn't get married without getting drunk. I got drunk on my wedding day. Your mouth was just dropping open. I was drunk when I got married. Yeah, so I, you know, had I didn't pursue a college education. You know, that wasn't offered to me, but I wasn't college material, right? I barely graduated from high school. I wanted to drop out my senior year, but my father wouldn't let me. And I'm grateful to him for that. But I want to, I'm talking about this too long, and I have to start stepping this up. I got to that point where I had no defense against the first drink. If I had one drink, I would have to drink until I blacked out. That was the kind of drinker I was. I didn't drink in the morning. I could have time between my drink. If I had a really bad weekend, I might go maybe a week without drinking. So it went like that for a while. And my marriage didn't last. We were married for 4 years, and he was not alcoholic. And so, but I wanted the divorce. I was the one, you know. And, you know, I think about this. I felt like I always wanted to remarry, you know. And it's like, well, I did have like a 7-year relationship with one man. I had a 6-year relationship with another man. And it's like, well, why don't they marry me? They don't want to marry me. And that's why I would leave them, because they wouldn't marry me. And I just was telling Feline about it recently. It just dawned on me. I wasn't marriage material. Why would they want to marry me? I wasn't a faithful girlfriend. You know, I was a drunk. And so were they. I mean, well, one of them was. I just wasn't marriage material. And so this is what happened. I broke up with this boyfriend who was alcoholic. I was living on my own for a while. I was working as a cocktail waitress in a restaurant. And I had, you know, like a binge, like a real bender. You know, my drinking was getting worse and worse and worse. There were lots of blackouts. And I never got arrested. I was a drunk driver. I never got arrested. I lost my train of thought. I had this really bad weekend, and I was at a party. It was a 2-day party. On the way home, I felt terrible. I had to stop the car a few times to throw up. I couldn't stand who I saw in the mirror. I, you know, had stained teeth from smoking. I was a big smoker. Stained teeth. I was overweight. And I just couldn't stand looking at myself in the mirror, and I didn't like who I was on the inside. So I didn't like my insides or my outsides. And that's when I said, you know, I was 31 years old, I'm gonna break up with this guy. He doesn't wanna marry me anyway. I'm gonna break up with him, and I'm gonna get my own apartment, and I'm gonna do fine, right? And that's when I had that, you know, when I was on my own, that's when my drinking really escalated. That's when I had that blackout for 2-day thing. And I just started saying, you know, I said, something's got to change here. I don't want to be this person anymore. And like in chapter 3, you know, you try all these different things. I should have gone to AA. I was in therapy. The therapist was telling me I should go to AA. I took Anabuse for 3 months. But I didn't think I was that bad to go to AA, right? Of course I was, but I couldn't see that. And my life is just falling apart, and I knew that I couldn't be a cocktail waitress anymore. And, you know, I didn't want to be my mother. And I hate to say this about my mother, because she died, it was a year ago, last August. And I had a good relationship with her when she died. And so I hate to talk bad about her, but I didn't want to be my mother, and I was turning into her. And she was obese. She was too afraid to go out of the house. She had agoraphobia, and she didn't go out of her house. And what was the other thing? I can't think of it right now. Alcoholic. She was alcoholic. So I was turning into her. And I was like, I don't want this. I don't, you know. And so I'm like, that's it. I'm going to get sober. I'm going to get rid of that job because, you know, and the other thing is I didn't like the way I was being treated in restaurant jobs. The restaurant owners were real jerks. The bartenders sometimes, although they would give you the drinks, the chefs, you know, it was just, the customers, the treatment that I would get from the customers, you know. And also I would see the drinking behavior of the women that would come in. And I couldn't watch it anymore. I hated it. So I tried to get sober on my own. And what I did to do that was, I said, I'm going to go to college. I know that I don't think it's going to work out because I am stupid, right? But I'm just going to try. I'm just going to give it a try and see what happens. And so I did. I went to community college. I had to take remedial math, remedial English. I'm 32 years old right now. And now I'm going to go to college, right? So I was shocked. I got good grades. I was totally shocked. And I learned that I was really good in science. And I wanted to be a dietitian because I wanted to learn how to eat so that I didn't have to be fat anymore. And I was doing all these things. I needed to clean myself up because I felt really dirty. I needed to change everything about me. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to stop drinking. Stop smoking. I stopped smoking and stopped drinking, all right, on my own. And I started running. I was running in 10K races. I flunked at gym in high school. Okay, all of a sudden, I want to be an athlete. I'm running in races. I'm bicycling, 50-mile bicycle rides, you know. And then I went to this community college for 2 years. That's what they called them in where we lived in Connecticut. And so I transferred into a university to be, you know, to study to be a registered dietitian. And so it was hard. It was really, really hard. I had to take this. I never took any math in high school. I had to take remedial math, remedial algebra, and now I never even had geometry. And I had to take the SAT scores. Well, you can imagine how I did on that, having no geometry, right? Very little math, very low SAT score. And now I'm in UConn. I get accepted to the University of Connecticut. How? How did I do that? God doing for me what I can't do for myself, right? But I wanted to be a dietitian, and nobody wanted to do that back then. They had all these empty seats they were trying to fill. You know, I got into this program. And I got really good grades, unbelievable. And I got recruited, you know, right from college. I didn't even have to go. I went on one job interview, you know. I got recruited with a food management company. And I moved to Syracuse. So I'm really cleaned up, you know. And by the way, do you think I was able to quit drinking totally for 6 years? What do you think?
No.
I had some slips. I definitely had some slips. And it was really, really hard. But you know what? I did it. And it's like when I look back, it's like it wasn't me. It was God doing this. I have to give God the credit because you know what? I took the credit for years. But, you know, it clearly was not me. I got a B in this class. It was advanced algebra and trigonometry. I got a B. That wasn't me. There was a blind person in this class. I said, surely I can pass this class if a blind person is in this class, right? That really helped me. But anyway, I did graduate. But when I needed AA was when I started my professional job. I got this job in Syracuse in this big medical center, kind of like Stanford. And I was so afraid, so afraid. Sometimes my first week at work, I would walk by the door, the front door of the hospital, and there's the door, you can run, right? But it was like a six hour drive to go back home. And so I stayed, right? And I was so afraid, and I wanted to drink, and I was too afraid to drink, right? So I did this for like 18 months I was in this job. And then I got a promotion, and I got another job. It was in New York, Western New York. It was south of Rochester in a little community hospital. And I was really in over my head then. I was the only dietitian in the hospital. The other one, there were 12. But I had to do everything. I had to manage the dietary staff. I had to do all kinds of things that I never did. I was so afraid. And I wanted to drink. I wanted to drink. And you know what? I did cave into drinking. It was pretty bad, you know. It was a short time. As I said, it was Labor Day weekend. And I really hadn't been in the job that long, but I said, you know what? I'm just gonna take myself out to dinner tonight. I've done pretty good. I'm gonna take myself out to dinner. The next day I was going to Connecticut for the Labor Day weekend. So I go into this restaurant. I got a soda. I'm having some food by myself. And these three men are sitting by my table and they want to buy me a drink. And I said, no. And they asked me again. And I said, no. The third time I said, yes. Well, I joined their table. I got very drunk. But you know what? One of those men knew my boss. This is a really small town. And I was so afraid that my boss was going to find out about that. But I had a very bad drive to Connecticut. I was so hungover. And that was it. I said, I am done. That was it. That was a Friday, Saturday. No drinking. My family is drinking. You know, we're doing fun things on the weekend. No drinking for me. And I had been in therapy in this town. I was seeing this therapist. And he refused to work with me until I dealt with my alcohol issue, right? And also, before this, I had a gut spasm. I called an ambulance to go to the hospital. And they couldn't find a thing wrong with me. Gut spasm. You need to decompress. And so, okay, I guess I'll go to AA. And so I did. And that was 32 years ago. And I have stayed. Well, I've stayed sober. I will tell you, I wasn't a good AA. I didn't follow the steps at first. I met a guy and he was new, and instead of getting sponsors, we had a relationship, right? And so that, you know, and then he got a job. This is how I got to California. Him, right? Forgot to tell you, he's a jerk, right? And, you know, it's like my boss would, what are you doing with this guy? You know, so then I come to California, right? My boss in California, what are you doing with this guy, right? And that didn't work out. You know what? God came to the rescue again. I got a job promotion, and because I did get a job there, you know, with my company. You know, I was able to, you know, go across the country, get a job, you know, and not lose my job. Anyway, when I needed to get out of there, God came to the rescue, and I went to Southern California, and he wanted to come with me. And I said, no, I'm done. And so anyway, I'm so glad I got to get out of that one. Thank you, God. And I got to come to California, and for 10 months I had, you know, that relationship going on. But I was learning a new business with my company, and it was, I had been a clinical dietitian in hospitals, and I learned food service management in schools. That's what I was training to do. And I got my first account in Lake Arrowhead, Southern California. And really good AA there. I got a sponsor. I got away from that guy. I got myself a sponsor. I started working steps for the first time. And I am 4 years sober, right? And I didn't. So I got a very late start. You guys are doing much better than I was doing. Good for you. But I'm still here. And so even when you do it badly, you know, God is a forgiving God. And He gets you out of situations, right? And so anyway, the job I got was here in Lompoc, actually. Eventually, I ended up here in Lompoc. I moved to Santa Maria with my company, and I was in that job for about 3 years, and we lost the account. And I got this great job here in Lompoc at the school district. And that was totally, you know, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And it was a big job, and it was a great job, but I stopped going to AA at that time. I really never clicked into AA in Santa Maria. I didn't get a sponsor. I wasn't working steps, and I was just, you know, working, and I took that job here in Lompoc, and you know, I had a commute on top of it, and I stopped going to meetings, for 12 years. And though I didn't drink again, I didn't have emotional sobriety, and I was a workaholic, and I had no friends. But I did stay sober, but I did forget to mention that I did get a relationship with God before I got here. It was in 7 years into my sobriety. I started feeling like, you know, there's, you know, kind of bored with my life and also just not feeling really good about my life because I still just wasn't, you know, doing things I should have been doing. And I had, you know, I had a great job. I loved my job. And I'm living in a great town, Pasadena. And I'm doing a lot of fun things, you know, dancing and skiing and stuff like this. But I felt empty. I felt really empty. And I felt like, and I had had a relationship with God when I was a kid. And I had, when we moved, you know, because neighbors invited me to church. And I went to church and I was there for 2 years and I got saved. But then we moved to Mississippi. And so that was that. And then I found alcohol. And so it was 40 years that I did not have a relationship with God. But he had a relationship with me. And he drew me back into a church. It was in Pasadena. I walked by this church every day for 2 weeks. I was a real, you know, exercise fanatic out there walking. I walked by this church every day for like 2 years. And I felt the call to go in. And so I did, and then I, you know, recommitted my life, and I started having a church life. And that's where I was when I moved to, you know, here, was I found a church, I started going to it. So I wasn't hanging in the breeze, you know, I had a church family. And I didn't drink because of that, I believe. But, so for 12 years I didn't go to AA, but a tragedy happened in my family. My nephew, who was 39 years old, my twin sister's son, was a heroin addict, and he died. Mm-hmm. And it just really shook me. And I was afraid I might drink over it, actually, and I did take a Percocet, one Percocet, because I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep for over a week. I went to support my sister. And, you know, I love that my sister called me. I was the first one she told, you know, that that happened. And you know, she called me, it was 6 o'clock in the morning, and she told me. And she was so afraid to tell her daughter, right, that her daughter lost her brother. And she said, I just needed to talk to you first, you know. And so I went right out there to support her. And she had supported me. I was very, very ill. I had acute leukemia, and I was in the hospital for a long time. And she came, and she supported me, you know. We have just really supported each other, my twin sister and I. And, kind of went down a rabbit hole. Now I forgot where I was. So I came back to AA. I started coming back to AA. And you know what? That is where, this is what it's like now, happened for me. It was 7 years ago when my nephew died. We're coming up on that in September. And I started going back to AA. And I also started going to Al-Anon. And that's when I started working the steps, and I had that heart, you know, my heart started changing, you know, God was changing my heart, you know, I had been going to church for a while now, and God was changing my heart, and I was really angry at my father, and I was angry at my mother, too. I didn't feel loved, you know, I was called names, and, but it was working these steps again, you know, with a sponsor that I started having a heart, and Al-Anon helped me to love alcoholics too. And you know, I made my amends, you know, to my mother and to my father. And I just want to talk about my mother because, you know, she's passed away now. And I had all these things that I saw about her that I didn't like. But you know what? I accepted her. I started accepting her. I told her I was sorry. You know, I had said something really terrible to her one time, and I made an amend to her for that. And I said, do you remember when I told you this? She goes, yeah. And I said, well, I said, you know what, I'm really sorry about that. I said, I didn't know anything. You know, I told her what I had said to her was, she said, why don't you quit college? I was complaining about it. And she said, why don't you quit college and marry Bill? And I said, because I don't want to be a maid like you are. You know, and that's what I said to her, and I felt terrible about that. And so, I said to her, I said, Mom, I just want to tell you that I thought that what you did was who you are. And I don't think that way. That was so stupid of me. And I just want to tell you that I have so much respect for you. She had to go to work after Dad left her for a younger woman, and she never had worked, and that was so frightening for her. And so she did it. I said, I'm so proud of you. But I saw the things that she did do, the great things that she did do. She made Christmas really special for us. She cared for us, nice meals that she made for us. She loved us in a different way. But I really, had a wonderful relationship with her, and I'm so glad. If you haven't made amends to your parents, that is such a great thing to do. And that just, the wall came up between me and my mother, and the wall came up between me and my father. And my father lives here now. He fell down a few times, hit his head. He had, a bleed and stuff, and he had to come here to live, and he's in a memory care unit now. And I love my dad, and he wasn't a good dad, but I forgave him. And we have just such a nice time together now. Two or three times a week, I go visit him. I try to take him out to lunch if he's up to it, or I have lunch with him there. I shave him. I clean his ears. They're real waxy, And, I make him smile. And, years ago, he had said that we were all mistakes. That was something that he had told me, too, when I was a teen. We were all mistakes. And I said to him kind of recently, I didn't bring that up that he had said that, but I said, Dad, so are you glad you had me? And he said, I am so glad. Yep. But he really is, and he's proud of me. He could tell me that today. And it's just really, I just want to, I'm almost done. My sponsor told me not to read anything, but I wrote a few things that, because I knew I wasn't going to get to it, so I'm going to read them really fast. I want to say, what have I found? What gifts have I found in AA? I have a brain. I learned that I had a brain. When you're not using alcohol, it works, right? Your brain works. I'm more than a body. I'm emotions. I have emotions. Fear is normal in the world. There's 366 verses in the Bible about fear. It's normal. It is okay to be my perky self. Some people don't like my perkiness. And to not know the answer. It's okay to not know the answer. To be kind to myself. And one day a week to just have that be for me, right? It's okay to do nothing sometimes, because I was just a runner, type A personality. I am an ordinary person, a mix of good traits and bad traits. God is breaking me down and rebuilding me. It's a lifelong process. I'm healing just week by week, I need not feel guilt or shame, because God loves me, He forgives me, and He grows me. I'm never alone. God is close. He wants to hear from me. He wants to help me be the best I can be in Him. And that's good for others too. So I'm really trying to work on that humility, just to be right-sized, right with God, and letting Him be in charge, right? And so the last thing I want to say is, my sponsor told me I need to speak to the newcomers and give them hope. And so you can be set free from the bondage of alcoholism, right? We can do this, right? 32 years. Life has been hard. I haven't drank over it. You can be found by God, who loves you. You can have the deepest desires of your heart. I wanted a little house, and I had spending issues. Well, I got help for that spending. You know, and I started, I paid off $30,000 worth of debt. Skiing is expensive. Dance lessons are expensive. I had a good job, but I had expensive habits. Well, God allowed me to have a desire of my heart to buy a little house in the Carriage District in Santa Maria. It's a little old section of town. It's a little house. It's 1050 square feet, two bedrooms and one bathroom. And I was able to buy that. And it was 10 years ago. And I fix it up. And I, you know, I'm doing the yards, you know, having the yards done and the house painted and taking care of it. You know, I'm a big girl now. And I don't need that guy that I always used to need. And God knew that I was going to be single and that I was going to need a good job. And he drew me to college. And God knew that I wasn't going to be married. Right, and that I was going to have to support myself. And he knew I was going to have bad cancer. That was a very bad cancer. 1 year before I got acute leukemia, I got the best insurance that my health plan had at my job, the best. I didn't know I was going to get cancer. God knew. And I went to a great hospital, Stanford, and you know what? God miraculously healed me because I had only a 20% survival rate. But God changed my diagnosis. I was supposed to be in the hospital if I survived for 6 months to a year. I thought I would lose my job. I was working for a school district. You don't lose your job at a school district when you have bad health. They keep you. They don't let you go. And that's all I have. Thank you for hearing my story. Sorry when I went over.
Let's have another round of applause for our speaker.